You are listening to Zero E Michigan with Carl Bloss and Larry Hudson. On this show, we try to explore and simplify what's happening with electric vehicles, energy generation, and zero emissions topics with a focus on our home state of Michigan. Together with our guests, we demystify topics related to driving electric in Michigan and how you can select, charge, maintain, and get the maximum value out of your EV. This podcast is sponsored by Consumers Energy and the Power My Drive program. Start your EV journey at consumersenergy.com/EV. Learn EV basics like charging and cost savings. Then find your perfect EV. Partner with us for home charging installation. Get a $500 rebate on a home EV charger. Or get $10 a month simply for charging off-peak. Need more guidance? Talk to an EV specialist to help you through the process. Get started at consumersenergy.com/EV.
Welcome back to Zero E Michigan. Today, it's just Larry and myself, and we wanted to have a little discussion about charging networks, which have been all over the EV news. So the thing that prompted me was in the West Michigan EV Facebook group, which if you're not a member of it, so shameless plug, I'll put a link in the show notes. But anyway, somebody discovered that in Benton Harbor, Rivian had put in or has put in a charging location with 6 chargers, but they are proprietary to Rivian only. And so, of course, there was discussion right after that. So, you know, you saw comments like, I thought the Rivian network would be available to all. How does this make any sense? You know, the Tesla has just announced that they're going to open their network. So how is it that we have closed networks now? So I wanted to unpack this a little bit. So Larry, any thoughts about that? Any starting thoughts?
I agree. It's definitely a topic that needs a deep dive. It's confusing. I'm on the same side of the person that commented that we need charging so bad and to be so exclusive, you know, just isn't. The more, kind of like the gas station, I guess, is one of the analogies I've heard. Can you imagine if you go to a gas station and it wouldn't fit in, like one's square, one's oval, one's round, and you have to make sure you go to the right one.
Or they wouldn't otherwise, take your payment, right? So you have to have the exclusive XYZ card to charge there, and they won't take cash. So I get that argument. So I thought in that same spirit, let's talk about the original closed network, which of course is the Tesla supercharger. So Tesla originally did this so that, you know, they were just building the cars. It's back, 2012, 2011, maybe. There really weren't any charging stations to speak of for long distance travel. So Tesla said, well, we're going to build our own for our customers, and it's going to work just for our customers. So the positive of that, of course, is if you are a Tesla customer, then the software, the hardware, everything just works. It's fully integrated into their architecture. So they have control. It's, to me, it's kind of like having an Apple Mac computer with the Apple software, as opposed to having a PC that's made by Dell or Acer or Lenovo. It doesn't matter,
right?
But it has to run on Windows, right? So then already you have to make some concessions because it has to work for everyone. So if you're Tesla and you say, well, I just want this for my cars, you can do so many things right. And that's what they did right. So that's, to me, is how this whole thing got started.
And there's an important part too that you're pointing out was that they're calling like almost dumb chargers or simple chargers because there's no card swiping, there's no panels to touch. And, you know, that seems what's going wrong with a lot of them. The car, you know what I mean? They take the human out of it and just let the car talk to the charger. And so that's where we need to wind up. We should follow their lead and quit trying to reinvent the wheel. Let the cars, from what I understand, all the cars have the technology. You plug it in, it will talk to the box, to the charger, and connect.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite there yet. That's the plug-and-charge technology. And Tesla built that in. I don't believe other EVs have that right now. They're coming.
It's
not working together now, that's for sure.
They said that they just, for whatever reason, I hate to say it, but my suspicion is it's all about money, right? ChargePoint's not going to make money if they're shaking hands, and all the people that sell the credit card and the touch screens, right? All those people are getting cut out of the pie. It's unfortunate, but I really think there's a lot of lobbying going behind the ground, you know?
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
Because it doesn't need to.
Yeah, I mean, you can, if you have networks like Electrify America or ChargePoint, you know, you have a card and you have an account, and yes, it's tied to a credit card, but the payment system is internal. So theoretically, you could, you know, load up with your favorite payment form, Bitcoin, load up your account with that, and it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Then they're out of it. No, I think this was born out of necessity for Tesla, and I totally get it. And you know, full disclosure, I was a Tesla owner, still am, but as of 2015, and it made that experience so much better, right? So the charging network was built into the navigation system. So when you planned a trip across the country or wherever you're going, and the trip was longer than the car's range, it would automatically figure out which supercharger you need to stop at, and how long it's going to take to charge, and how long the overall trip is going to take, and even down to how many superchargers are available. You know, how many are being used right now, how many are down.
They got so much right, didn't they?
Pardon me?
They got so much right. I mean, the simple Absolutely. Chargers, and where they located them, and not in the front of the parking lot, but the back out of the way, so nobody's, right. You know, least icing. I mean, there were so many little things that they figured out and nailed. It's just amazing. And now we're seeing all the growing pains. It's so unfortunate, all the other networks.
Yeah. So Tesla to me is still the gold standard of networks. And I,
for sure.
I think that's kind of universally accepted right now. However, now they're opening things up, and this is where things get a little bit sticky. So you can do whatever you want if it's done with your own money and there's no public funding involved, and you're doing it for your customer, and you're doing it primarily for your shareholders and your customers and things like that. And then I believe Rivian is doing the same thing. They're building out this network for their customers exclusively to start with, but then they have the option to open it up later. And Rivian has, you know, in their defense, already put in some chargers, some public level two chargers. Holland State Park, for example, has level two chargers. I don't think it's accessible during the winter, which is a separate discussion, but they're going to be building out their level two network in some of the state parks, which I think is awesome. But they closed this one down, and it's causing a little bit of flap. And I think what's happening now with the Tesla supercharging network, now that they're opening it up, part of the reason they're opening it up, of course, is so they can get some of the federal funding. And that, to me, is when everything changes. As soon as you say, well, now I'm going to take taxpayer money to build out some of these stations, now it needs to be accessible to the EV charging public.
Right. Are you anticipating issues like, you know, now that the government's involved, it's not going to go as smooth as it used to and all that?
Well, it's funny. I actually put that down as a discussion point in my notes, and that's why I'm looking off to the side here. You know, if you're a libertarian, of course, nothing that the government can do is right. But if you look at, for example, what's happening now with the NEVI standard. So NEVI, National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure, there are minimum standards for stations. So if you want any of the NEVI money, it has to be non-proprietary, meaning it can't just be for one vehicle type. No smartphone app is required. No membership is required. Allows for open access payment methods, so a credit card. A minimum of 4 DC fast charging stations. A minimum of 150 kilowatts each. And then, you know, be publicly available, be alongside, be located among designated alternative fuel corridors. So, and you can say, oh, well, this is government overreach. But to be honest, it really makes sense.
Makes sense.
Right? Yeah. You want this to be available to everybody. And, you know, we get in our little silos and we say, well, the way I want to do things is the best way. But really, the idea here is we want to make EVs and driving electric. We want to make that accessible for everybody.
So now you're saying silo, is that the same as saying like we're so tribal?
Yes.
Is that basically the same way?
Yeah, it's a term. Maybe it's business speak, right?
We're in our own little ivory towers. Yeah. Right. Well, the tribal just, you know, in my brain, right, as I see these like violent prehistoric people tribing, you know, around a fire, which I think when that's used, right, it should be kind of a draw, because silo leaves my brain thinking of corn in a big tall tower.
Right.
And, but when you go tribal, it outpates a good, you know, kind of a derogatory saying, right. Look, are you going to act like cavemen or are you going to, you know, evolve?
Well, we're our own little tribes, right? Like if I'm a Tesla owner, it's the best one. Or if I'm a, you know, Mustang Mach-E owner.
But we shouldn't be, right?
We shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be, yeah. But I guess we're kind of hardwired to do that. So back to the Tesla network. So now, you know, they said, well, we're going to open it up. And of course, again, they want some public funding for that. But now, and we've already seen this because they're rolling it out and they're having some issues because vehicles are different. So for example, the Tesla and CCS plugs are different, right? So they came up with this magic dock where if you're a non-Tesla driver, then you can unlock this with the app. So again, now you have to have the app. You can't do it with a credit card. So we already have a little issue there for universal accessibility. but you can access it through a CCS adapter that's captive on the Tesla cord. Okay, that's great. The next thing is that the cables are relatively short because they're designed for Tesla charge points in the car being on the driver's side rear of the car. So Tesla owners, when they come to a supercharger, they typically back into a spot. There's usually one or two spots that you can head in park for people with a trailer or something like that. But typically, you need to back in. And then because they're on the driver's side, so if you now have a vehicle, if you have an F-150 Lightning or a Bolt EV or something, for example, that has a charge port on the driver's side front, let's say, and I think both of them are right in front of the driver door. So now you have to park in that spot a little bit differently. If you pull in forward, you're now actually taking up the adjacent parking spot and you're blocking that from another Tesla owner potentially, depending on which side you're on. So there is a problem.
We talked about this with Jeff DeNoyer because, right, Ford is requesting that they have 3 DC fast chargers at their dealership in order to be EV rated or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And he was frustrated because he was like, well, why do I need all of them here? Better yet, let me spread them around my community. And I want to put them like gas stations. So he's already figured out that let's set them like a gas station where they're on an island in the middle so you can drive up from either side, right? And you're not blocking anything. So he's already evolved.
Yeah, so that's great. We have people that are forward thinking. What's an ideal charging station? That's really the question. And so ideally, you would have all stations available to all customers, right?
Just like the gas station.
Just like a gas station. So credit card, you know. Now, if you want to join some kind of a special, you know, pricing plan where you're paying by the month, that's fine. But it should still be accessible to anybody that just pulls in and needs a charge. Okay.
Right.
It's just like you have fuel perks and all this sort of thing. So to me, you can still go both ways. You know, like Electrify America has this plan where you pay, $5 a month or is it $4 a month? And then it buys down the rate per kilowatt hour. But fundamentally, you can pull in, swipe a credit card, assuming the credit card reader is working, and just charge. So flexible payment options. And then what you were just talking about, the pull through spots, make it like a gas station. So because we're going to start to have the trucks with trailers, we're going to have, or just vehicles with trailers. I mean, my Tesla Model Y has a trailer hitch.
Right.
So I want to be able to, and I don't want to have to jimmy the trailer around or unhook it or whatever.
And we discussed that, right, with the other YouTube, with the Bolt and their trailer. And didn't he say 50% of the time they were having to drop the trailer somewhere so they could get a charge?
No, I think they actually had good success, but sometimes they had to have the trailer sticking out. It was certainly less than optimal.
Okay.
I think they did have to unhook the trailer at times, sometimes like a mile away or something, which, you know, you don't want to do because somebody drives off with your trailer. So ideally pull through spots, which, you know, you have that at gas stations. I mean, I've rented an RV before and you pull in and, you know, you take up a ton of space, which brings up a good point that the charger should be located so that cars don't block multiple stations, right? So you should be able to pull in and whether your charge port is on the left or the right, just like on your gas cap, sometimes it's on the left, sometimes it's on the right. And then, you know, other stuff like amenities nearby, maybe some windshield washer fluid, some trash, some of what the, at least in Michigan, the Tesla Owners Club is doing, where volunteers are going out and putting these washer fluid bins and trash cans and things like that at the superchargers. So that's kind of what we'd all like to see. And the question is just, how do we get there? And I know, Larry, sometimes we discuss, wow, we should force these networks or these companies to do this. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of forcing anybody to do anything. I mean, we do need some oversight, whether it's, you know, governmental, to have some minimum standards. But, you know, I think we're going in a direction of goodness. This is, to me, it's a little bit of first world problems.
Growing pains. Yeah. And I think it was the Now You Know, Zach and Jesse, they did a little talk and they said, can you imagine back when gas stations were starting to populate and all the troubles and how many people were driving around with, you know,
I think that was our discussion with Ben Marshall, wasn't it? With the
1 gallon gas jugs sitting in the back seat. And then you hit a big bump and they break and you're covered in gasoline because you're trying to drive further than the 20 miles that that gas tank would get you or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, if we could go back and look at the growing pains that gas stations had, right, and all the troubles, then for sure, like you just pointed out, we are first world problems, right? We need to really toughen up. We got it easy. This is nothing.
Right. Yeah. So I would say, I mean, I even wrote down some main messages here. So my first one is actually chill out. Right. So I think this stuff will come together. You know, and if you're taking a road trip, let me go back. Actually, 80 to 90% of charging happens at home. We know this, we have data, right. And I can confirm that for myself. The Tesla Model Y that I just bought, you know, it's got less than 1,000 miles on it. You know, it's actually like 800 miles. I have yet to go to a public charger. I charge at home and I've taken, you know, little mini regional road trips. I've gone to Grand Rapids. I've gone to Ludington. And I've always had enough range to go up and back. And I just charge at home. So I haven't even needed public chargers. Okay.
Now. Right. That's a good point that I think we overlook often.
Right. And then, you know, do your best to navigate the stations that work best for you. If you're a Tesla owner, you're probably going to stick with Tesla superchargers. And, you know, you may want to go out and buy the $175 CCS adapter to be able to use use CCS stations to bridge the gap. And then have some faith that the combination of the markets and some government oversight will nudge things in the right direction.
And it is happening, right?
It's
10 years ago. Remember, share some of your experiences because you were early adopter. I had my Volt, so I wasn't, but I tried to charge everywhere I could just to show people, right? That they see you walking out and plugging
in. The chargers were being used. Yeah.
Yes.
You got those arguments for early on when you're, you know, somebody would park at a charging station. I had this actually the other day here in Muskegon, the downtown charge. There was somebody, there's a credit union across the street from the public charger. And somebody parked their ICE car in front of the charger. And I wanted to go in the adjacent spot and charge. And I said, can you just move your car like one spot forward? And he said, well, nobody ever uses these things. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm sorry. I live on this block. I know people use these. So that's a BS argument. So we still have that. We have some education left to do. So my early road trips, I mean, I would go to campgrounds and all these sort of things. We don't even have to do that anymore. If I had to make that same trip with a 2016 Nissan Leaf with like 90 miles of range, it would be so much easier today. It took me like 2.5 days to drive this car from Kansas City up to Michigan because I was going to level 2 chargers and, you know, overnight charging and campgrounds. And, you know, when I got to St. Louis, all of a sudden they had DC fast chargers and I could zip across. You know, was it ideal? No, but I was too cheap to have the car shipped. So
plus the challenge, right? Maybe we're just weird, but I love the challenge of finding where's a charger. And then you call that opportunity charging, right? Yep. So, okay, I'm going to set my lunch break. Even when I drive to Denver in the Volt, I didn't have to, but I went to every charger I could get to. And, you know, that would be my lunch break. And just, you know,
there's an adventure part of it. You know, that's what Ben Marshall was saying with the Livewire. He said, you know, 10 years from now, we're not going to be talking about this anymore. And sort of the adventurous spirit is gone. It'll just be like getting gas today. So we won't even talk about it anymore. So in some sense, if you're an early adopter, you're probably enjoying this. You're gamifying this. You know, if you just want to get to Arizona or Florida and you just want to drive, it's a different story, which brings me to a point. If an EV road trip becomes too tedious in terms of trying to figure out the charging infrastructure, then for goodness sake, just rent a vehicle. I mean, a gas vehicle.
Now with Turo, I just rented I had to go pick up a semi. By the way, if everybody's wondering, what am I doing over here? I drive a semi during the week, and I had to run down to Virginia to pick up a new Mack truck. So we wound up renting a car. It was $127, and six blocks away was, you know, where I could return the car. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, I parked the truck, dropped the keys in the box. I'm charged $127, and I'm inside the new Mack truck and bringing it home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so convenient. And, you know, that's just that. And then we have Turo, right? You could rent Turo.
Turo is kind of neat. It's the, kind of the Airbnb of cars. So you could even try out cars, which is a separate discussion. But I've done the same thing. But there are local rental places. You don't just need to go to the big rental firms. Here, I live in Muskegon, and up in Montague, the local Chrysler dealer rents minivans. And I've used those when I've needed, you know, six seats, seven seats, whatever, because I'm not going to buy a vehicle where I only need that capability once or twice a year. So again, if you're going to go on this big road trip and it's going to be a pain in the butt with an EV, you know, all the money that you saved from driving electric, you can probably
rent a vehicle. But I like the word you used, gamify. Mm-hmm. I like that word you used, gamify. Maybe that's a tip, people. You make it fun, you know, if you got some kids in the car, who can come up with a blessed road trip and to gamify the journey. And I've had a lot of fun with it myself. And so I think it's just, if you go into it with a good attitude, you can make it fun.
Right. And then also you can say, well, on this trip, I saved this much money on not buying gas. So now I'm going to buy the kids an ice cream or something like that, you know.
Exactly. Again,
Save it up for, you know, splurge on the bigger hotel room or something like that.
Now you're stopping at all the little cool sites that you used to just drive by, you know, because it doesn't cost you anymore. I mean, it costs you in time, but it doesn't cost you anymore to pull off, because, like, you know, the car is so efficient, right? Mm-hmm. So now you can turn off and go that extra mile, charge up, look at the world's largest ball of string or whatever, right? They got all the weird things.
The Corn Palace in South Dakota, yeah, I think it is.
Right.
And then maybe one more point, and Larry, this will speak to your heart. You know, if you road trip a lot and you can only choose one car, then maybe a plug-in hybrid like a Chevy Volt is the right choice for you at this juncture. And they're out there. I just talked to a gentleman yesterday. In fact, he's shopping for an EV, and he has a Volt, and he's actually looking to get rid of the Volt. And, you know, there are some decent prices out there. A couple years ago, when I bought my daughter's Chevy Volt, which for her is the perfect vehicle, it was $15,000 for a 2015 model year. And of course, now times have moved on.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's a good value.
Facebook
the first year she drove it from like August to November, never bought gas. And it's a great way to figure out how electric works, how electric driving. You know, you plug it in when you need. You don't even need a level two charger. You could probably plug into a regular outlet at home. So it's a kind of good way to get your feet wet.
Exactly.
And that's what Larry drives.
And, right. I've had 14 of them now. I buy them from the insurance yards because they're more complicated. Everybody's afraid of them, but Chevy did a great job. They're bulletproof. It's ironic. The one I'm driving right now was sideswiped by a semi. You could see where the lug nuts cut into the rear quarter.
I've kind of heard the same thing, that the Volt was way over-engineered by GM.
It's amazing.
And, you know, they did things like, it doesn't matter that you drive it to 0% or the battery to 0% or you charge it to 100%. They left enough buffer to make it kind of foolproof so that you didn't have to worry about, you know, charging to 80% and only running it down to 20%. Of course, a plug-in hybrid is intended to run the battery quote unquote empty, but I'm sure they left a buffer in there so that you're not doing damage.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of people have done YouTubes where it says you don't have any battery left. They ran it out of fuel, and then they went, and I think they went like 20 miles, even though it said zero, until it wouldn't move anymore. Ben with Teslanomics, I think is his name, does that. And then there's a kid in Chicago, and he does a lot of hot rodding and stuff, but he had a Volt for a while, and he also did that, you know, drove around with a gallon of gas and then ran it out of fuel and ran it out of electric. And it was surprising, you know.
So there's a lot of safety factor built in there. But again, the idea is that you drive it like a normal car and you don't worry about it. I think it's unfortunate in my mind that that GM retired the Voltec system, because I think they could have put it in, you know, some small pickup trucks. And extended the life of that a little bit more.
Out of those 14 cars, all the batteries were fine. There was one car that I bought with some other members, and we took it to a local dealer in Kalamazoo trying to get him, and it worked. Now he's out buying, because every electric car we brought up there, you know, hybrid or whatever, would sell right away. And he was like, wow. So now he gets it, right? We green pilled him or whatever you say. Anyways, we found one through his dealer network, and it was the very first loaded to the tilt 2012. And it must have been like a grandma and never drove it. So it only had, I think, just let's say a little over 50 or right under 50,000 miles, where all the other cars I got were well over 100. And that one battery was having trouble. So it was like lack of use seemed to be the only problem that might hurt them.
The Voltec drivetrain warranty and battery warranty is like 100,000 miles, right?
And we made it in. It turned out, luckily, one of the guys that partnered up with us used to work at dealership. He goes, it doesn't matter that it's a 2012, it's the date it's sold that they start that warranty on. And we made it by like 2 weeks. So they paid.
You got a new battery.
It's refurbished, right?
From what I understand, it's working, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so one of his buddies, as an electrician, wound up running. Once he heard that they warranted the battery, he ran down and bought it. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, good discussion. I think maybe we'll cut it off here so we don't go too long. Maybe another time we should talk about disuse of EVs, because I have another story about brakes. All right, that's all we got time for today. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
If you enjoyed or learned from this episode of Zero E Michigan, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Visit our YouTube channel for other related videos at youtube.com/@0E-Michigan.